Welcome to the Center for Universal Oneness. We are an open, welcoming, spiritual community that supports all faith traditions and invites you to join us on your spiritual journey. We host different speakers each week to guide and inspire us. We are guided by universal principles of acceptance of all that is sacred, and we strive to live in the oneness of love. Please enjoy this presentation.
So we're now being recorded, and we officially welcome Stephanie Nuria Zapata, who I think everyone knows, but is just this wonderful gift of Sufism, Buddhism, just spiritual wisdom, who is just has many credentials, an educator, designer, world traveler. And she's been doing this kind of work for 25 years, educating people on these spiritual traditions. She's the former head of International Sufi Movement and just recently resigned from that. The Sufi message's main purpose is to work towards unity and to bring humanity closer together in a deeper understanding of life, which, as I just read, seems to be fitting for our organization. And if you want some more information about her, you can see it at www.sufimessage.org. So without further introduction, let's hear what Stephanie has to give us with. Take it away, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to ask, I'm sorry, we had a little snafu at the beginning. So I wasn't able to ask Kyle to make me the co-host. Can you do that? So I can record from my end, Kyle. Okay, thank you so much. I want to find my record button. I don't know, it looks like it's already recording, but maybe from your side, but we'll work that out later. All right, I'm so happy to be here again. I always feel at home. And from the first time I joined you in person in Kansas City, and now we're in Hollywood, Florida, and thank God we were lightly impacted by the hurricane, but we're also very touched by the devastation that's happened in other parts of Florida and the Carolinas. And perhaps this is a very fitting type talk because it's God's hidden hand. And when we see things like this, the question is why, but maybe there's a reason for it. There always is. God has a purpose and a reason. There's a quote by Hazrat Inayat Khan, or we could call him Sufi Inayat Khan. He was the lineage stream that came from India. And he says this, put your trust in God for support and see God's hidden hand working through all sources. And if we can tune our minds or turn our minds in that way, it's quite profound what can understanding can evolve. But I want to begin with this one question. And that question is there anyone here today that hasn't been touched by loss of some kind? And this might be a missed opportunity, a lost relationship, the death of a loved one. I know we've just been in a few months of grief over the loss of our 14-year-old lab, who was such a good friend and family member. And I would suspect that we've all been touched by loss and death in some way. But the further question is really, how do we handle this loss? Does it define us and drown us in sorrow? Or does it propel us to a greater understanding and insight? Yeah, that's a good word. Insight into the nature of things. I'm going to let someone into the waiting room. Okay. Well, I read things every morning. I get things delivered to my email box. And I always start every morning with reading inspiration to kind of set the note for the day. And one of the things that I read from is a book called Glimpse After Glimpse. And these are excerpts that have been derived from a book called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. Perhaps some of you have read that book. It's by Sogyal Rinpoche from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And he says this, each time the losses of life teach us about impermanence. They bring us closer to the truth. And when we fall, when you fall from a great height, there's only one possibility. and one possible place to land, and that is on the ground. And he says, the ground of truth. And if you have the understanding that comes from spiritual practice, then falling is in no way a disaster, but a discovery of an inner refuge. When you cannot find the answers without, the only place to go is within. And there we can find solace. There we can find refuge. There we can find perhaps insight and understanding. And you know, in our language, in our kind of vernacular Western language, we have words that are spoken around loss. How many people have heard these words? And the question is, do we believe them and do we trust in these words? For example, it's always darkest before the dawn, and there's a silver lining in every dark cloud, and there's light at the end of the tunnel, and your faith will heal you. Those are things that I myself try to sit down and contemplate in these dark, sorrowful moments. And there have been many. I mean, over the last few years, I've lost all of my spiritual mentors, all of them. I've lost, of course, this dog. I've lost my mother. I know you all have experienced these losses. If I didn't have something to cling to, I would be like a puddle in the corner somewhere. So these teachings really uplift me and remind me to keep moving forward, to find meaning in the sorrow and the loss, and to let it, you know, one day Joe and I, we spent a lot of time doing other things and kind of breaking our routine of things that we would otherwise do with our lab. I had to do that with my mother. I actually left a few days after her passing for Turkey for 5 weeks. But at any rate, I was obligated for a scholarly encounter there. But at any rate, I remember saying to him, I'm going to let this experience just tear my heart wide open and just let it get bigger. It's like the shell breaking open. So we can do that too. So I talked about this a few weeks ago at another gathering online, but I'm going to say it again. I'm wearing this beautiful mala that my sister, Cecily Mudita Sabato, gave me. She brought it from India several years ago. But today I wear it, and I've been wearing it a lot, because it reminds me how these pearls are cultivated. It's done so by a foreign substance entering into the oyster shell. It becomes an irritant, maybe creates some pain. And what happens is something beautiful forms around that, these pearls. And we have to ask ourselves, can we let the pain of loss and our grief create something beautiful in us? Can it soften us? Can we become more compassionate towards others? It has a purpose and it has a deep meaning, because it's inevitable in life, inevitable. Well, there's a practice that our Sufi master Inayat Khan gave us. He worked a lot with symbols. And one of the symbols that he gave us to work with and contemplate is the cross. It has many meanings, and perhaps you yourselves have studied the meanings, but this is something that I would like to offer from the Sufi tradition, that when we make the sign of the cross, we first begin with the left shoulder. In the tradition of the Sufis, they call this the side of limitation. And when we move towards the right, it is the sign of, or the side of unlimited capacities, potentials. And we do this motion a lot in our practices, even with the heads when we're doing certain prayers. But today I'd like to offer a bit of an explanation from this tradition. So this line, this horizontal line that we draw, is the line of limitation. It's that earth plane that we're recognizing, and we're drawing it through our heart, our spiritual heart, the feeling heart. When we draw the vertical line, we're recognizing that we can bring divine consciousness through this plane of limitation into our being. And this vertical line, just like the horizontal line, has two directions. It descends, but it also ascends. In Sufi traditions, and we've talked about this, the breath is used like a ladder to ascend and descend. Maybe one day we're going to do a little retreat actually on breath. Well, again, as we draw this vertical line, we consider divine consciousness descending and filling our being. Or we could say reconnecting with what's already there. It's already there, but we have to remember. And this reminds us to live in the world while uniting everyday life on the earth with everlasting life from the heavenly wells. There's a great female Sufi saint by the name of Rabia. She was from the area of Basra in Persia. And so she's referred to as Rabia of Basra. And she said, "I'm eating the bread of this world and doing the work of that world." And so that's what this practice can offer to us. Now, we do this practice with several words. Sometimes they're mantric words. But today, I thought it might be appropriate. It came to me. Sometimes I awaken in the night. I sit up and I have some tea. Lately, I've been having a little Campari, I'll be honest with you. And I sort of think about these sermons or these classes that are coming forth. And I was going to do an entirely different practice, but I often say parts of the rosary because I call myself a Bufi lick. I have a Buddhist tradition, Sufi tradition, and also Catholic tradition that I draw upon. And I think of those words of the Lord's Prayer, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." They're beautiful words. And if we think about it, it encapsulates what I'm trying to convey today. And so I thought that, and I'll do the practice and then I'll ask you to join me just a few times to get a feeling of it. And we'll use our hands to draw these lines, the line of limitation and the line of piercing that line of limitation. And we will say this again, moving from the left shoulder to the right, "Thy will be done on earth," and then the vertical line, "as it is in heaven." Okay, so let's do this. If you'll follow me, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And let the two lines intersect in the heart. "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Few more times. "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Last time. "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." I pray that this practice is a reminder for us to tune to these higher planes during good times, offering thankfulness, and during difficult times, as a reminder to also offer thankfulness, but also to surrender to God's plan for us. So a very difficult thing to do. Often I get the image of us like a fish fighting the fisherman's line. But what if we just relax? And we could just float in the hands of God, in the heart of God. When troubles come, let us try to remember to keep our faith. Pain and loss may actually be a blessing in disguise. If you can think back on your own life, you know this is true. You don't have to believe me. You can see how those moments shift things, change things, and These blessings in disguise can be viewed as transitional points, as a bridge to a new experience, new places, new quest, and new understanding. If we can discipline and turn our mind towards thinking in this way, it will create within us a light that is filled with patience and resilience. Let us remember to fortify ourselves with prayer and to live in the moment, neither clinging to the past, which creates so much pain, and projecting ourselves into the unknown future, which can make us feel fearful and afraid. Let God's plan for us just naturally unfold. Be open. It's a scary place to be, but it allows us to be in the moment and be open to what's happening in the next moment. See all hurts and disappointments and losses as temporary, because they are, and things change. The writer Sir Thomas Stoppard once remarked, I love this quote, listen, look at every exit as being an entrance to somewhere else. Look at every exit as being an entrance into somewhere else. So contemplate this and look for this, these new passages, these new thresholds in one's life. So am I running out of time? Could someone tell me, what, Dennis, do I need to stop? Because I can just stop, but because I have more. Barb, Dennis, tell me.
No, you're great. Please.
Okay, continue. Can I go on? All right, yes, thank you. Please. I don't want to take up everybody's morning. I know time is precious, but I would like to convey this story, and I'm sort of wrapping up, but there's a story of a woman, and her name is Gisa Gautami, and she lived during the time of the Buddha. Her only child, a very young son, died, and she was unwilling to accept the death. She carried her dead son in her arms from neighbor to neighbor, begging for someone to give her medicine to bring this child back to life. And one of the neighbors said, we don't have that capacity, but perhaps the Buddha does, and he's very nearby. Why don't you go and ask him if he can help you and your son and bring him back to life? Well, she went to the Buddha, she found him, and she said, can you please help bring my son back to life? And he said, go to your village and go to the households and go and ask for the mustard seeds from people or household that has never been touched by death. I will make a medicine to bring your son back to life from these mustard seeds. Well, she was greatly relieved and she had hope. So she went to her village. The people were very kind to her. They said, we'd be willing to give you all the mustard seeds we have, but we have all experienced death. So then the day turned to night, and she was still without any mustard seeds. And then she realized the universality of death, the universality of loss. I will say the universality of change. Here we're speaking of death, but it's also change. According to the Buddhist verse, her story comes from, it says that she came to this realization. It's not just a truth of one village, nor the truth of a single family, but it's the truth of every place, of everything. And everyone has been touched by death. You know, death is not just ceasing to breathe. There are other kinds of deaths. We know that. It is indeed true that everything holds within itself the nature of impermanence. We can't hold anything fixed. It's not. It's constantly moving. Our lives are moving in a line that God has planned for us. So with this new understanding, Kisa's grief was calmed. She accepted it. It's very important, this surrender and acceptance of what is. She was able to bury her son in the forest, and then she returned to the Buddha, and she confessed to the Buddha that she could not obtain even one mustard seed. And he said, let it be. And then he gave her these words. Dear one, the life of mortals in this world is troubled, brief, and inseparable from suffering. This is a whole other beautiful teaching. It sounds terrible. Oh, we're suffering. No, it's an uplifting teaching, but that's another time. Maybe I'll come back and talk about that. There's not any means, nor will there ever be, by which those who have been born can avoid dying. We know that. We see it in our own lives. All living beings are of such a nature that they must die, whether they reach old age or not. I've heard the Dalai Lama say with my own ears, sitting before him in a group, everything born has within it the seeds of its own destruction. Think of that. It's happening. We're happening. Embrace what we have today. It's beautiful, even if we're sad, even if we're happy. Clinging to either one brings even more sorrow. Okay, those are my words, the words of the Buddha. Just as the earthen vessels made by the potter's hand and in shards. So is the life of mortals, both young and old, both those who are foolish and are wise, all fall into the power of death, and they're all subject to death. And our weeping and our grieving will not obtain for anyone peace of mind. On the contrary, this pain will become all the greater, and it will ruin one's health. Dead bodies cannot be restored by our grief. We have to accept it. The Buddha then instructed Kisa in this way. Reject grief. Do not allow it to enter your mind. The person who seeks peace will pull out the arrow of sorrow and useless longing and the self-made pangs of grief. The one who's removed this unwholesome arrow has calmed oneself to obtain a peace of mind. Verily, the person who has conquered grief will always be free, sane and imbued, confident, happy, and will come close to nirvana. So with this understanding conveyed from the Buddha to Kisa's mind and heart, she was able to enter the first stage of liberation. So this terrible thing that happened in her life became a great boon and blessing because it allowed her to be uplifted and to have a greater realization. And I pray that may that be so for all of us. Let the grief and the sorrow work on you and soften you and illuminate your hearts and your minds. Well, yesterday, and I know I'm taking a little bit, I'm trying to wind this up. Yesterday, a really good friend of mine that's a leader, a Sufi leader in New Delhi, sent me this quote. I thought, I'm going to read this. And, you know, maybe you go back and you think about it yourself. I can send it to you all also. But it's like this koan that can kind of keep working on you. And it relates to this subject matter, I think. It says, a hungry stomach, an empty pocket, and a broken heart teach us the most valuable lessons in life. Well, we have to think, what are those valuable lessons for all these losses and challenges? It's a good question. I have my own answers, but perhaps you have yours as well, and I'll let you think about it. So in the end, we could say that missed opportunities are really perhaps the cosmic pause button getting pushed. For example, maybe a broken relationship leads to an even more fruitful and loving relationship. And think of your first love and how your heart was broken, but also think about what your life might have been if you stayed with that first love. Maybe you are with your first love. Well, that's great, but I'm not. I don't know many people that are. The pain and despair of the loss of love one may guide us to a greater understanding like Kisa got. God willing, may that be so. May we obtain an enlightened heart from that, a compassionate heart from that, an open heart from that. So the bottom line is, nothing lasts forever, and nor should it. Be patient, remain calm. Many people here that knew our Parker and loved him, also our dog, said to me, time heals all, and it does. We get stronger. It does its work on us, and then we release it. But again, in the words of an icon, put your trust in God for support and see God's hidden hand working through all sources. So I have brought, I've asked Kyle to play something. It's a reading, and it's beautiful. The voice, it's a man's voice, and it comes, it says, let me say a few words though. Can we go back? Can we undo this? Kyle, I need my notes again. So it's called When I Die. And this is important in Sufi terminology and Sufi practices, because the Sufi practice is dying before death. And what does it mean? It means that we strive for a greater understanding into the deeper meaning of life beyond this world of limitation. This practice, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It means striving for this deeper meaning, but it also means lifting oneself up from the denseness of the earth. It means striving to tame the ego that keeps us imprisoned in limitation by our attachment, our passions, our anger, our desires. We work with that. We work with it. We see it. We recognize it. We don't push it away, but we try to soften it. It's like scrubbing a cloth to bring it clean. It means striving to glean a glimpse of God's perspective. Why is this happening from God's perspective, not mine, God's perspective? And if we attempt to do this daily, then through God's grace and blessings, we may, even for just a few moments, a few golden, precious moments, we may begin to touch the infinite and the everlasting. The point of dying before death is this, to touch that infinite and everlasting part of ourselves that, guess what? It's in there. God has gifted us. That's in our heart and souls. But do we remember? We're asking to do that. We're asking to do that. Where God's asking us to do that. And this will carry us from the eternal life and the momentary life now and into the hereafter. I'm going to ask that God bless us all with mercy, wisdom, and insight. Now we're ready to play. And may these teachings spread in all directions so that all beings may be healed and soothed. Thank you so much. We're ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you very much for your words of wisdom, insights, practice, and questions, wonderful questions as well. Thank you. As always, wonderful.